Good evening, and thank you for coming. My name is Alan Pally, and I'm producer of public programs for the New York Public Library for the Performing Arts. On behalf of Jacqueline Z. Davis, our executive director, and my colleagues at the Performing Arts Library, I'm happy to welcome you to the opening program of the 2007-2008 season, as well as to the first program in our series, A Rose by Any Other Name, Adaptations of Shakespeare. We also welcome those who are watching tonight's program via the World Wide Web. 50 years ago, next Wednesday, the groundbreaking musical West Side Story opened on Broadway. 40 years ago, next Tuesday, as a teenager, I came to work for the New York Public Library. Around that time, I remember arguing with my cousin as to which was the greatest musical, Gypsy or West Side Story. I don't remember what conclusion we came to, but we were well aware that both had been written by Arthur Lawrence. I would like to acknowledge a few special guests in the audience tonight. John Mazzola, who came to Lincoln Center as chief executive officer in 1968 and later served as president of Lincoln Center. Sylvia Julie Mazzola, who was a production associate on the original production of West Side Story. Jamie Bernstein, the daughter of Leonard Bernstein. Craig Urquhart, vice president for public relations at the Leonard Bernstein office. Donald Chan, who has conducted numerous productions of West Side Story. Joey McNeely, director of the worldwide tour of the show. Dancer choreographer Jemzy DeLapp. Anderson Farrell, who manages the Agnes DeMille Estate. The wonderful Tyne Daly. And the renowned writer and critic, John Simon, who will present a program in this series in November. And speaking of critics, one of the great collections in the library's Billy Rose Theater Division is the Brooks Atkinson papers. On September 27, 1957, Atkinson, who was New York Times drama critic for many years, wrote, "Gang warfare is the material of West Side Story, which opened last night at the Winter Garden, and very little of the hideousness has been left out. But the author, composer, and ballet designer are creative artists. Pooling imagination and virtuosity, they have written a profoundly moving show that is as ugly as the city jungles and also pathetic, tender, and forgiving." Arthur Lawrence has written the story of two hostile teenage gangs fighting for supremacy amid the tenement houses, corner stores, and bridges of the West Side. This neighborhood, actually. The story is a powerful one, partly, no doubt, because Mr. Lawrence has deliberately given it the shape of Romeo and Juliet. In the design of West Side Story, he has powerful allies. Leonard Bernstein has composed another one of his nervous, flaring scores that capture the shrill beat of life in the streets. And Jerome Robbins, who has directed the production, is also its choreographer. Since the characters are kids on the street, their speech is curt and jeering. Mr. Lawrence has provided the raw material of a tragedy that occurs because none of the young people involved understands what is happening to them. And his contribution is the essential one. The playbill for West Side Story announces The action takes place on the west side of New York City during the last days of summer. And so now, on the west side of New York City during the last days of another summer, it gives me great pleasure to introduce Arthur Lawrence.
It's late enough. I'd like to begin with a cautionary note. Several decades ago, there was a symposium on West Side Story with the authors and one of the producers. And before it began, I remarked, this will probably be Rashomon. And indeed it was. Now it's 50 years since it was first began, and there are tales and legends running all over. And since I was there at the beginning, you probably assume what I will tell you or say is the truth. Well, that's an assumption I question. It will be my truth. And there are too many stories going on with people telling their truth. I mean, for years, Carol Lawrence has been saying she auditioned 17 times. Can you imagine sitting through 17 auditions? It never happened. Then Cheetah Rivera has been going around saying how a dream would come true for her to be choreographed by Jerome Robbins. And then West Side Story came, and she was. Well, she wasn't. It was Peter Gennaro who did all her dances and all the Sharks dances. But Jerry did indeed direct her, so she got a sliver of her dream. Then there are the third-person tales, two in particular, one about Jerry and one about me. They both took place on the same night, which is a technical rehearsal of West Side before the first public performance in Washington. And the story about me was, we were all very upset with Oliver Smith's scenery. We didn't like it much. And towards the end of the evening, the drop came up for the cellar scene between Tony and Doc, and was a Rube Goldbergian mess of steam pipes. And the story went that I said, if you don't take that off the stage, I'm going to go up there and pee on it. And they didn't, and I did. Well, I didn't. And the only proof of that is common sense. But everybody going to stand, the crew, the producers, the stage managers, while an angry author went upstage and peed on the drop? I don't believe it. And I would know. With Jerry, it was about, he wanted the stage clear for his second act ballet. And he, the bed was left on that the lovers had been on. And he said, well, get it off. Well, the set that Oliver Smith had designed was a box set. And they said they couldn't get the bed through the walls. So Jerry said, I can. They said, how? He said, give me a saw. So they gave him a saw, and he sawed a hole, and he said, now get the bed off, and they did. But they didn't. It never happened. And it couldn't have happened. Just think, how did the bed get on? It's that simple. But these stories persist. Even to this day, there's an exhibit honoring Lenny Bernstein in Washington at the Library of Congress, I think. And in the stuff of the exhibit is an early script of West Side Story. And they sent it to me to validate it. Well, I didn't write it. I didn't have to look very far because right at the beginning it says Tonio. I'm very finicky about names. I spend a lot of time on them. I never wrote Tonio, not only for West Side Story, but for anything. I never would. But So I told them. They said, well, that's what you say. So, you know, they're in Washington. You can believe them. So that's why I say cautionary note. You have to, I think the problem, one of the problems in this country is that people tend to believe whatever someone in authority says. And that's why we're in the mess we're in now. Well, to the subject of the evening. Shakespeare and West Side Story. Actually, Shakespeare doesn't have much to do with West Side Story. Perhaps there should have been more. Perhaps we were intimidated, but he really doesn't. The person who was responsible for the idea was Montgomery Clift. In the early 1950s, that's for you, Sylvia. In the 1950s, he suggested to Jerry that he make a musical of Romeo and Juliet. And Jerry brought it to Lenny Bernstein and to me. And we were both very excited. I was more excited than he was because I had seen On the Town, and I thought he wrote the most exciting theater music I'd ever heard. But then I began going to start an outline and thinking about it. And Jerry's idea was to set it on the Lower East Side. The boy was to be Romeo. We always call the project Romeo, by the way. Romeo was to be Jewish. Juliet was to be Catholic. It was to take place on the Lower East Side during Passover Easter. So they didn't laugh then. I thought it was Baby's Irish Rose with music. So I backed out, and Lenny was too busy anyway. So nothing happened. Jerry would always bring it up. Nothing happened until some years later, 1955, really. Lenny and I were both in California. And the country had changed in those few years. There was a great deal of juvenile delinquency and gangs. And I went to have lunch with Lenny. We were sitting at the Beverly Hills pool, home of glamour and club sandwiches, and talking about some gang riots the night before in Los Angeles with Chicanos and Angelinos. And Lenny loved the Latin beat, and God knows he wrote it, used it beautifully. So we both thought this would be a great idea for a musical. He used the gangs. But I couldn't do it in Los Angeles because I didn't know Los Angeles, but I knew New York, and there was Spanish Harlem. So that's how it became West Side Story. Where does Shakespeare come in? Well, it follows the plot, sort of, and there are sort of facsimiles of the characters, but it really doesn't stick to it very closely if you examine it. In fact, one of the biggest changes was not noticed in this country, really, but was in London, where they really know their Shakespeare. And they commented on it over and over that there was an improvement on Shakespeare, because the message in Shakespeare from Juliet to Romeo doesn't get through because of a plague. And I had changed it to the subject of the musical, which was love trying to survive in a world of bigotry and violence. And bigotry and violence keeps the message from getting through. So I was very proud of that. Ignored my home country, but did well in London. What else is there that the big problem for me with Shakespeare is it's the language. His language is so beautiful. What can you do? You know, you can just hope there's a lot of music, because that's the equivalent of Shakespeare. And I also had to invent language not because of Shakespeare, but because of the... You couldn't use street slang. The play wasn't literal, and a lot of it was dance, and that... I remember it was a producer we had for a bit there, as you remember, and she said to me, why don't you have them say how that's how the cookie crumbles? And I said, because the cookie won't be crumbling next week. You have to be very careful with words. There was one word I chose because I thought it would always be in the vernacular, and it is, and that's cool. But it had a different meaning then, and it has different meanings since. Today it drives me mad. Everything is cool. And people no longer say, you're welcome. You say thank you, they say, cool. Say, how are you doing? Cool. How's your mother? Cool. And so forth. Which is a denigration of language, which the Lord knows you don't find in Shakespeare. I'm definitely, desperately trying to find a connection between Shakespeare and West Side Story and having a terrible time. Well, this has nothing to do with Shakespeare either, but we are going to have a revival of it in 08-09 on Broadway. There was a piece in the New Yorker, a short squib 2 weeks ago by David Denby, the movie critic, and he was talking about it being the 50th anniversary and how people wondered whether it could be revived if the language wasn't corny or this wasn't right. And he said that's because they saw that dreadful movie. And he said, if any musical is a masterpiece, this is, and it should get a smashing revival. So I sent him a note, and I said I was delighted with your opinion of that miserable movie, which I always loathed. And I said, I'm equally delighted that you think there should be a revival, because there's going to be, which I'm going to direct, and which is going to be totally contemporary without changing one word or one note. And I said, there, that should titillate you, and that's all I'm going to say. And that's all I'm going to say to you, too. This is just to put a plug in for the show. And now, any questions I will take? Yes. Wait a minute.
In the 1960 return, there was a 3 or 4 minute overture, but there seemed to be some question about whether in the original run there was anything more than a little prelude, either off Broadway or before. Do you have any recollection at all?
You spoke too fast for me, and a little louder.
All right.
I think for everybody, actually.
There's some question about whether there was an actual overture before the Broadway run or during the first Broadway run. In 1960, when the show returned for an engagement after a tour, there was an overture. But there's some question.
There wasn't an overture originally. It was pieced together originally to have everybody yell Mambo, get the audience going. And it worked. Yes. No, no. There's no connection with the Capulets and the Montagues. That's like Hatfields and McCoys. I'm serious. In Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, it's two families who have nothing really to be upset with each other about. This is racial and class. And various things, specific things, not just one family doesn't like another. So there's no relationship that way at all. I think that's one of the big differences between West Side Story and Shakespeare. This is very social and very political, and Shakespeare isn't. Yes? Yeah.
Show, I took over the part of
What did he say? I didn't hear all that. Maybe it's better. I don't think they want it repeated. I don't believe any of this.
And I want to say, sir, you are just such a delight to see you walk on the stage. You are just brimming with ideas and such good outfits.
You mean to walk? Cool. Cool. Yes.
I'm afraid to ask because you made On Love this movie for 7 years. Why did you make
it? If you're serious, I will answer you. First of all, the screen is either literal or it's surreal. So when you have a musical, why is there suddenly an orchestra on the screen? You have to, when you have like The Wizard of Oz, it's surreal, it's fantasy. The Sarah Rogers, fantasy. They can have tremendous orchestras all over the place. Why are a bunch of boys, obviously made up, tourgeting down the city streets to an orchestra? I don't believe it. The trouble is they did not adapt the show to the screen. They filmed it. There's one number that was done for the music that is really like, and that's cool. It's very cinematic. The rest of it is filmed showbiz, and it doesn't belong. And the acting is probably the worst in any picture ever made. And if you don't believe me, look at it again. That's a nice impartial comment. Yes. Yeah. Oh, my Jamie!
So, I often go around and see productions of West Side Story at high schools all over the country, and I tell them a little bit about the background, and the kids always want to know, how come Maria doesn't die, too, like Juliet does?
Right.
So, my question to you is...
Why doesn't she die? No, it's a question of character. By the way, Jerry wanted her to take sleeping pills. And it took a bit of persuasion that when you take sleeping pills, they can tell you're alive. But I didn't believe that girl would kill herself. Suicide is an act of cowardice. She's a strong girl, and she's not about to give up. So she stays alive to go on with life and to accomplish something, maybe. That was deliberate. There was an interesting thing there. She has this big speech about the gun, which was a dummy lyric I wrote for an aria your father was to write. Well, and all this stuff, he never got around to it. And to this day, they're acting that dummy lyric. It was never changed. Seems to be okay. Also, he was one of the most exciting people to work with I have ever come across. He was like his music. He was absolutely dynamic and, oh, it was just contagious being in the room with him. Yes. Yeah. Here.
You haven't mentioned the actual lyrics.
Why do you ask? And what is it you want to know? What is it you think I'm not saying?
Dummy lyrics. Or something. Had you written actual lyrics?
No, that was a dummy lyric, and that's what is now his speech. Oh, you think I'm... I don't know what you're thinking. Cool, yeah. Yes, there. Oh, I meant the woman behind you, actually. Yeah. She'll go next, okay. Is there any what?
Footage, filmed footage
of the Broadway show, of the
original Broadway show anywhere. Is it in a safe deposit box someplace?
Do you know, is there?
The Ed Sullivan show.
Oh, that, yes, Carol Lawrence and Larry doing tonight.
Not
terrible. I don't think so. Not that I know of. Yes.
Was the musical complete when you began rehearsals?
Oh yeah, it was. But it was redone. For example, the song in the balcony scene was One Hand, One Heart, and that was changed to Tonight and switched to the bridal shop. Yeah, back there. Oh, she was just sitting down. Okay. Yes.
You said you love names. Antonio is not a name that you ever do. How about Tanta? Was that Tanta in that earlier version that was Jewish and Italian? Tanta was a character based on the... am I wrong, sir?
There wasn't any Jewish-Italian version. Somebody may have written it, but I didn't. Well, you know, I know, forgive me for this. This is a sort of delicate. There's so much ex post facto jotting down of things in journals that never happened at the time that turn up later. And you can believe them or not. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
In your book, you talk a lot about the dynamics between the two of you, Robbins, Bruce Dodd, and Sondheim. And I'd like to talk a little more about it. Two things related to it. You said that Bruce Dodd and Sondheim were afraid of Robbins, which I think is interesting. Were afraid of Jerry Robbins.
Yeah.
And also the fact that at the very beginning, you all worked together at the very end, the three of you hated Jerome Robbins. So I want you to talk more about that.
You want me to rip up Jerry Robbins? Well, Jerry did inspire fear. At Lenny's memorial, which I sort of ran, I introduced Jerry by saying, there were only two things Lenny was afraid of, God and Jerry Robbins. And I never understood why, because Lenny was so fearless otherwise, and he was so wildly talented, and why he was afraid of Jerry, I don't know, but he was. Yes.
Apparently dangerously close to the orchestra pit, and apparently
It was another show. Because I've heard from people who say they saw him fall in the pit at the other show. I assume it happened at every show. Yes. No, they weren't supposed to talk to each other, though. They weren't supposed to talk to each other, the actors. It was all, there was something bizarre about it. It was an attempt to use the method, but he didn't take into consideration the age of the performers. So trying to get them to feel the antagonism of street gangs, he said, "You're Jews and you're Nazis." They didn't know what he was talking about. That was the World War II. That was nothing to them. So it all got rather confused. But it was, you know, strictly Stanislavski. Yeah.
When Carol Lawrence was talking to Rick McKay for the documentary Broadway, the Golden Age, she actually talked a lot about the rehearsal process. And she said that Rick McKay was story that you might want to expand on regarding her scene where Larry Curtis stabs, you know,
oh, I'm fascinated. Carol is really amazing.
Apparently she was beating him so hard in the chest he had to go to the hospital and came back with a wrapped chest and told her that she was beating him so hard his lungs had actually been separated from her.
Where is she? I mean, Larry's dead and so is Jerry. I never heard of that. No, you ought to make the rounds of the hospitals and check it out. Yes, back there.
Where did you get the idea for the character
Anybody's? Oh, I just made her up. Yeah, there's a question of a name giving me a character, you know. And I just... You know, an author sometimes uses... You do use your imagination. It's not, you know, people come and say, "That's me." Well, it's news to me. You know, you invent. That's part of what writing is. And things happen, and you're asked to explain it. And very often you can't. You don't know why you wrote that. I suppose, you know, a few hours in a therapist's office, you might find out. But it's not worth it. Yes. Him, then you.
Mr. Bernstein was supposed to write some of the lyrics with Sondheim. Do you know that for a fact?
Yes.
If so, yes.
Lenny performed one of the most magnanimous acts that anyone ever has in the theater. He and Steve wrote the lyrics together. Most of them were Steve's. The great majority. When we opened in Washington, Steve was not mentioned in the reviews because he had done nothing and the rest of us had. And Lenny said to him, "It's too important to you, means nothing to me. I will take my name off the lyrics." And he did. And that is true.
Do you know which lyrics they were, though?
If I did, I wouldn't tell you. Yes. Oh, she's next. I'm here to talk about Shakespeare and West Side Story. What do you want me to say about Sondheim?
Whatever dirt you wish to know.
Dirt? Oh. Nothing to do with West Side Story. Sorry.
Let's hear it.
What? What did she say?
Well,
What is this, page 6 or something? Yes. Let's be serious here. Well, it was in the Upper West Side. That's where it took place. Yeah, it was. It really was. Yeah. No, I left out something where we did use the play, and it almost got funny. In the balcony scene, he uses hands a lot. So in the meeting scene, in the dance hall, I used hands. And I told Jerry about it. And then they began doing this and this. And I had an infected tooth, and I went to New York to have it taken care of, and I came back. And I sent Jerry a note. If you're not careful, this whole thing will be called hands, because that's what it all was. And it came from Shakespeare. Yes, ma'am.
What's your favorite line in the show? What?
Your
favorite line.
I don't have one. Not in any show. Yes, desperate people do desperate things. What? I'm not. Yeah, what? Yeah, what about her? No. No. I never have. I don't believe much in awards anyway. Yes, in the back there. You mean they use boys in it? Is that what you mean? They use. I know nothing about it.
But you wouldn't do that in your production,
I guess. No.
Good.
Yes. Yeah.
The book to West Side Story is one of the most terse and short books of any unusual leaders. And
it's the shortest. That's the way it was. It wasn't cutting. You know, I began writing in radio, so I learned how to be brief. You had to. You only had a certain amount of minutes. In the theater, you know, you can go on forever. But in radio, you were limited. And it taught me to be concise and to say as much as you can in a few words. Back there.
Why was the dream ballet cut from the movie?
Don't ask me anything about the movie. Yes.
With her question, if they signed the licensing agreement, they were in violation of it.
Probably. Yeah. Yes.
When you were all working on the production of West Side Story, how did you feel about it being so radically different from other musicals?
Well, it isn't so radically different. The integration of all the elements was really begun in On Your Toes, where ballet was part of the story, and that was Balanchine. And then Agnes DeMille did it. I think we did it, if I may say so, better, and probably more of it, but it was a culmination of what had been coming, and we really let go and did what was good for the moment. And I think one of the reasons it was so successful is that we had only one goal, which is to be good. And not, I thought it would run, if we were lucky, 3 months at the most. Nobody did. Yes. That to me, biggest, the most original thing about West Side Story and the effect it had on musicals, it said anything could be done in a musical. I mean, we killed them, we raped them, there's terrible bigotry, but it all worked. And it says that you can make anything work in a musical, just dare. Yes. No, they're all too old. I'm serious. I mean, to hope I can get them as young as possible. I would like Somewhere sung by a 12-year-old boy soprano. I'm not kidding. Yeah. That kept being changed. It kept being changed as one's attitude toward the future kept changing. You know, whether you were optimistic or not.
So how do you feel about what's written that exists? Is that something you think should be stuck to in any subsequent productions, or do you feel even now you can change?
I think it can be changed.
I'm sorry?
I think it can be changed. I think and I found this out really with this last revival of Gypsy that I did. There's no point in doing a revival if you can't get a fresh look at it. To replicate something, I think, is dreary for the audience, is dreary for the people participating. And you want to find something more. You want to explore. And what's fascinating, when you take that attitude, I mean, that was the third time I did Gypsy. I wrote the bloody thing. And I found more about it the last time than I did in all the others put together. Thank you. Well, I think it was because of that attitude. It was done rehearsed very differently than any musical ever had. I said to them, this is a musical for actors. Because we didn't have any money. So I knew there weren't going to be scenery or costumes. You weren't going to get them that way. You had to get with them with what they were playing. And we sat around the table for days, the way you did with the play, exploring what the words were in the lyrics, not singing them, saying them, so that they knew who they were and what they wanted and where they were. Musicals are very misunderstood. But I think there are very few people who know how to do them, and very few people understand what goes on in them.
But how do you feel other people came along and started fooling around with, say, Gypsy?
Well, I think because of Gypsy, I'm writing about it, actually. I'm writing a book about called Mainly on Directing Gypsy and Other Musicals. Mainly is the key.
So, how do you feel about other people dealing with your work and changing it?
Changing it? No. I'm an, then I become the author.
Good.
No. Absolutely not. Yeah.
Since you would have liked a 12-year-old boy soprano.
14.
Sing somewhere. Why didn't you do it in the original production?
Didn't think of it. Didn't think of it. Didn't think of it. Those were different days. In the 50s, look, if I saw a DVD of a production that was a great success, and I looked at it, and I thought it was bad. And I was very glad I saw it, because that play is a minefield today. You begin with supposedly tough kids singing, "When you're a jet, you're the top cat." Where is this coming from? These are killers? These are musical comedy kids. You have to change that, the attitude, and that's hard.
Why didn't Carol Lawrence sing somewhere in the original production?
Why should she? I'm serious.
She was the lead.
The defense rests. Yes. You're excited about it the way you're excited anything you do in the theater. But when I did this Gypsy, I knew it was only going to run 3 weeks, although it may transfer to Broadway, actually. Got any money? Yes. Well, there's one thing I don't understand, and I never will. People come up to me and say, "West Side Story changed my life." I don't understand how. I'm not kidding. I really mean it. Anyway, I don't think that way. West Side Story is in the past. I'm very grateful that people like it, and that they still like it, and the way it's received, but that's there. You have to move on in life. Well, it's a question why they love something. Do they love it because it's a hit? We never know. One more question. Two, okay. You and you.
Home of the Brave changed my attitude about almost everything. So your words can change attitudes. Home of the Brave.
Yeah, I heard you. I don't get it. I mean, I'm grateful. I just don't think that way. You know, people say, "What's your favorite and which do you hope is going to last?" You know, when I'm dead, I'm dead. How will I know? Yes.
Given the sort of darkness and violence of West Side Story, was it difficult to get producers interested?
Yes. It was turned down by every producer in New York, including the ones who did it. There was one who stuck. That was Roger Stevens from the very beginning. And there's a lady here who stuck with it the whole bloody road. But that's very rare, people like that in the theater, and they're almost non-existent today. So, thank you all for coming.